Welcome, everyone, to episode 397 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about the Bulls' future, James Harden's first impressions with the Nets, and some unfortunate news for the Indiana Pacers. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. We're also being supported today by Manscaped, so get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you. And on that note, I am joined, as always, by my trusty co-host, Morten Jensen. Mort, how is it going?
It is going well, Brian. We have a locked and loaded episode ready for you out there, so I look forward to that.
Me too. We are being joined here today by Jason Pat. He is a contributor at Forbes Sports, editor at Clutch Points, and the co-host of the Cash Considerations Pod. Jace, how's it going, man?
It is going well. How are you guys?
We are doing well. Before we get underway here, can you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and anything else you'd like to plug?
Yeah, absolutely. At Bulls_J, you mentioned a few of those other places, Forbes, Clutch Points, and then my pod with Rookie O'Donnell, Cash Considerations, and then also SB Nation Bloggable. Been there for a long time, still doing some stuff there as well. So I'm all over the place with Bulls stuff and NBA.
Very good. Well, yeah, please give Jay a follow. The Bulls are very sad this year, but at some point, allegedly, they might get good once they learn how to win, as head coach Billy Donovan said Friday night after they blew, 10-point lead with 2 minutes left against a Thunder team that is actively trying to lose?
Yeah, it was like 10 points with like a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. It was 16 with like 4 and a half minutes left. They were up by 22 earlier in the game, so it was, yeah. And the Thunder, who like should be tanking, and I thought they'd be tanking, or like 6-6 somehow, so good for them. Yeah. They didn't have Al Horford in that game either. So I was like, the Bulls were on fire. They were looking great through one half. Then the Thunder caught fire in the third quarter, came all the way back, and the Bulls opened it up again. It was like, all right, Zach LaVine, who's been on fire, hit a ridiculous three, makes it like a 16-point game with, like I said, like 4.5 minutes to go, and then just a complete meltdown. Bad fouls on both ends. There was one I just saw that the last two-minute report – there was like a Wendell Carter Jr. 3-point foul on Mike Muscala. Should not have been called a foul, but I'm like, whatever, not complaining about that. It was put himself in a bad spot anyways. So like between the bad fouls, some bad shot selection, bad defense, the game goes to OT and they lose in OT because they couldn't do anything offensively there. And the last possession was just a comedy of errors with Denzel Valentine getting in the way of Zach LaVine trying for a game-winning shot, just like knocked him off his, just put, like, I don't know where he was going. Like, Zach's running down the middle of the court to shoot a three-pointer to try to win the game, and Denzel like runs right into him, like, to stay on the wing, dude. Like, what are you doing? So like knocks him off balance, and Zach puts up a shot that wasn't even close, and yeah, the Bulls lose. Billy Donovan come out with quotes talking about how like they need to learn how to win better, and they started talking about the moon and like astronauts and like how they need to like go through, like become astronauts before they can actually go to the moon. Kind of, I don't want to say shades of Jim Boylan, but it was a game that was like, it was funny. Rob Schaefer of NBC Sports Chicago, Bulls beat writer, tweeted, like, I think it was at halftime, about how the Bulls last year blew like a 25 point lead in Oklahoma City and lost. And like at the end of that game, like Jim Boylan, like, didn't have any timeouts left, so they couldn't get a good last possession. People were going crazy because like Wendell Carter and Kobe White were taking pictures with Chris Paul after the game. People were freaking out after that game. So Rob brought up like about that game, and it's like, oh well, hopefully like this won't backfire, and of course they end up blowing this 22-point lead as well in just an epic fashion. So four losses in a row, which is really disappointing, because about a week and a half ago the Bulls erase the 20-point deficit themselves against Portland to get to 4-4, and everyone was feeling pretty good about it. Like, they started 0-3. They looked terrible in the first couple games. Then they started playing a lot better. They get to 4-4 with this win over the Blazers, this big comeback. They had the Kings the next night. They had a chance to go over 500 for the first time in like 3 years. I think it was it was like March 2017 is the last time the Bulls have been under or over 500. They have a chance going into Sacramento, and Sacramento is like the worst defensive team in history right now. I think they have a D rating of like 120. The Bulls lose that game. They lose a close game in that one. And then they have two more games on the road trip in LA against the Lakers and Clippers. And they were competitive in both those games. Zach LaVine had shots late in both those games, either tie or win it, come up short. But still, 1-3 road trip out west where they were competitive in every game. Like, all right, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. Then they had the weird stuff with like the Celtics getting all their COVID issues. So they had a long time off. And then this Thunder game, you're like, all right, back in the winning column. It looks like they were going to. And then they totally blow it. Just really unfortunate loss.
Yeah, so, I mean, after the game, as you said, Billy Donovan said, this is a hardworking group. It's a good group of guys. They want to win, but they don't know how to. They are learning how to, and he made those. I think the moon comments were like, yeah. You know, it's like, I want to go to the moon, but I don't want to be, I want to be an astronaut. I want to go to the moon, but I don't want to put the work in. These guys say they want to win, but, like, do they actually want to put the work in to learn how to win, basically? So, not what you want to hear from your new head coach 12 games into the season. So, Jay, what do you think, like, what is plaguing this team? Why have they been so inconsistent to start the year?
So the defense is definitely a big thing. I think they're 29th or I mentioned the Kings. I think the Kings are, like, historically bad defensively. And then it's, like, the Bulls, like, right there. So they just haven't been good. They've been working in this new defense because last year a lot was made of Jim Boylan's, like, blitzing defense. And while it did work, like, to a degree, they forced a lot of turnovers themselves. Now they're playing the drop, and they're not forcing as many turnovers. And just, like, they have bad defenders in the backcourt with Zach and Kobe. Like, as fun as they can be offensively, that's a terrible defensive backcourt. So, like, they're bad at the point of attack. Wendell is, I think, a better defender than it's showing right now, but he's still young, and he's trying to cover for these mistakes and learning this new defense. While Patrick Williams has been promising, like, he's also still a rookie, so, like, he's trying to guard LeBron and Giannis and Kawhi, and he's doing his best, but, like, they're roasting him. So, like, just still a lot of stuff with just learning this new defense, and just the bad defensive backcourt is a problem. So, like, they've been giving up a lot of points, so that's a big issue. And then the turnovers. Like, the Bulls offense overall has been much better this year than last year. They were one of, I think, 29th in offense last year. This year they're, like, right in the middle of the pack, and lately they've been on fire with their shooting. When they can actually get shots up, like, Zach LaVine's over 50% like his last 4 or 5 games in a row. Their three-point shooting, I think they're like 38-39% for the season. So, like, overall their shooting percentages are great. They, like, rank towards the top of the league in true shooting percentage, but the turnovers and then some of the late game decisions, that kind of goes together. You just see it just cropping up at just bad times. Poor shot selection. As good as LaVine can be, he took some really early tough shots in the shot clock late, and we've seen him miss. Like I mentioned, he has missed a few big shots down the stretch in some of these games, and he has the tendency to sometimes go ISO ball and just kind of chuck some bad shots. He does have turnover issues as well. I mean, Kobe White's had turnover issues, and sometimes we saw him kind of tighten up late in games. So just still a young team having issues late in games with decision making, making the right play, and getting defensive stops. They've gotten unlucky in a few games as well, except the Muscala 3-point foul that shouldn't have been, and that Warriors game where technically, like, Damian Lee shouldn't have hit a game winning shot. But still, like, they still make a lot of mistakes both ends of the court with the turnovers, with defensive miscues, and that's the big reason why they're 4-8.
Yeah, and I mean, things might not get much better coming up. They have at Dallas today, Houston tomorrow, at Charlotte on Friday, and Charlotte's been frisky, then Lakers, Boston, Memphis, Portland to end the month. So there's a soft stretch at the beginning of February, 2 against the Knicks, 2 against the Magic and the Wizards. So, you know, that's what you could probably look ahead to if you're a Bulls fan. But, you know, they might be entering that stretch at like 5-13 or something like that. So, Mort, I know you've had some questions coming into the year, at least, and then early in the season about Kobe White and whether he's, you know, the point guard they need. Do you think he's part of the reason that they're having these turnover issues? They just don't have that traditional point guard?
Yeah, they don't have a point guard. I mean, the one point guard they have, Tomas Satoransky, has played 3 games. Kobe is clearly a two. I do think there is some merit in testing him out at the one and trying to like improve his court vision and improve his floor game. Like that's actually okay to me, but it's pretty clear that he's never going to be a so-called traditional point guard or someone who really has like a great sense of timing and play coordination and all those things. Like, he's a scorer, and I think that is the next step for him, is getting into a role that's probably more suitable for his skill set. But no, the Bulls are in dire need of a playmaker. And also, I just want to address this at the top, because like when you go on Twitter and you see people just crap all over Zach LaVine, I actually have a problem with that, because he is miscast, yes, but I don't think that's his fault. Like, he's clearly not a number one, and he has the ball in his hands so much because there aren't really better alternatives. Which, like, what do you want from him when he's being put in that role? He's not that guy, but you don't have that guy, right? And then when you basically compound that by putting another shooting guard in Kobe at the one, so you have an entire backcourt that just aren't playmakers, aren't traditional table setters, that's just going to make the turnover issues so much worse. And then you can say, well, then they can go to Wendell Carter, Lauri Markkanen. Markkanen has just been a black hole. I mean, he's basically Al Harrington at this point. He's just doesn't give up that rock. No, but he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't move it. Wendell Carter is a lot better, but I still think he's so insecure. I think Jason will agree with me on this one. Like, there,
yeah,
tell his confidence levels is just, it is, oh boy, it's in the tank. And when that's in the tank, you just can't expect a whole lot of production out of him. Now, I will say, when he is feeling it, he can be just a tremendous all-around asset for the Bulls, but it's really on and off. So
yeah, hit or miss.
It really is, yeah.
So I guess the question then is, you know, assuming things don't get better in the coming weeks, where do the Bulls go from here? Because they're at this weird point where Markkanen, you know, they couldn't agree to the extension with him, so he'll be a restricted free agent this summer.
Oh, he's gone.
LaVine has one more year on his deal after this year. He'll be a free agent in 2022. Wendell Carter Jr. is eligible for an extension this summer. Like, they're kind of at this point where they need to start making some major decisions about, is this our core moving forward or not? And if not, who do we get rid of? Who do we keep?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, yeah, if it definitely doesn't, you mentioned that hard schedule, and if they do kind of go in the tank, like, I would have to assume they make some moves. Because this offseason, like, a lot was, like, they signed Garrett Temple. A lot was made. That was, like, their only big move, getting him and Patrick Williams, so that this new front office with AK Eversley, they would use the beginning of the season, whatever, to see what they got, and then kind of go from there. And so far, it's been kind of the same. Like I said, there have been some improvements offensively, but defensively, it's still bad. And we still see some of the question marks, like the Zach Kobe backcourt, definitely the question mark, because they just have a lot of the same strengths and weaknesses, as kind of Mort was saying. Like, they're both kind of more as twos. They don't really have that high-level decision-making. They can get buckets. Zach is playing at basically an all-star level. I mean, he's at, like, I think he's second or third in the NBA in scoring, so his value is very high right now. It's probably highest it might be before this next contract, because he's only making like 19.5 this year and next, before he's probably going to be looking for, I don't know if he'll get a max, but he'll be looking for something like that, probably 25 to 30 million a year. So, I mean, but with that backcourt, like, you have to try, like, can those two be like a long-term backcourt together? I there certainly is huge questions between the defense and just with a lot of the overlap with their skills and weaknesses. So, I mean, that does definitely go into, and I guess Mort said Lowry's definitely gone. Like, I would probably lean towards that as well. Like, they should probably look to trade him too. Like, he just missed a bunch of time because of like COVID health and protocols or whatever. He did not have it, but he had like a calf issue, and then he was a close contact and he was out for a bunch of games. And that's when the offense was looking really good. Obviously, they did look pretty good against the Thunder too, but he himself came back and was not very good. And like in crunch time, he was just a non-factor. Like, he took a couple bad shots and just a total non-factor at the end of a game. So, like, that's just been kind of the thing with him. But back to Zach and Kobe, like, obviously this then kind of goes to, like, should the Bulls trade Zach LaVine, which has been a very popular just kind of discussion on Bulls Twitter lately. And, like, I know a lot of people think, I mean, you can't trade a guy who's putting up, whatever, 20, 29 a game, and his true shooting, he's their best player, his true shooting is, like, up over 60 or something. He's playing the best basketball of his career. But it's definitely a conundrum, because I was looking at some numbers yesterday and I was tweeting some stuff out. You look at it, and it's like the team performance when he plays is just not good. Like, yeah, he's like a great individual scorer, but like you look at just like their lineups, they're like core lineups with like all their young guys. They're bad. Their starting lineups are terrible. You look at some even like breaking down, like I tweeted out like the two man lineups. And again, there's a lot of noise with this stuff, especially early in the year. But like,
yeah,
but like the Zach and Kobe duo has played the most minutes out of any two man combo, and they're like a minus 11 net rating, which is terrible. Obviously, it's awful. Their D rating is like 119 or 120. Like their offensive rating is pretty good, but like they can't stop anybody. That's obviously not all on them, but like they're a terrible defensive combo. And it just kind of goes back, like, can those two guys play together as a long-term duo? And who knows? So like, and Zach LaVine's also, I also tweeted this out. His like on-off differential is the worst on the team. He's their best player, but he has the worst on-off differential. A lot of that is because of the bench stuff. Like the Bulls bench has actually been pretty good since like Thad Young came back. Like he's been good. Garrett Temple's been good. Denzel Valentine, as goofy as he can be with the shot selection and the dumb stuff he did at the end of the game against the Thunder game, his like plus minus has been great this year, and he's a pretty good shooter and a decent playmaker. So like their bench has been good. So like that does contribute to Zach's on-off differential being terrible. But like, again, while there's like a lot of noise there, when your best player has that kind of on-off differential, like that's just super weird. And like, what do you do about that? So like, if you don't think like Zach could be your guy long term, and you don't want to pay him whatever 30 some million in his next contract, I mean, you have to at least look into it. Like I've come around on Zach, and I think not all this stuff is his fault. I would be fine keeping him. But like, you have to at least look into it, and especially that now that James Harden has been traded, and like there have been some big trades, whether it's Harden with all these draft picks, whether it's Jrue Holiday with all those draft picks, like could you get a really nice haul for Zach LaVine from a contender? Like Brian, I know you're a Sixers guy. That the Sixers have come up in conversations. Like I know the Mavs and Nuggets have been involved in like Zach LaVine trade rumors. So like, would those teams be willing to give up a decent haul for Zach LaVine, who's not on an impact level, obviously? James Harden, obviously not. Probably not as Jrue Holiday either, but still one of the best scorers in the league and would slide in like really nicely as a number three guy in the Sixers. Like, would they be willing to do that after not getting Harden? I have no idea, but the Bulls should at least look into it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my question is, you know, kind of twofold. One, from the Bulls' perspective, is this Jimmy Butler 2.0, where it's like, you're scared of paying him for his next deal, so you're going to sell him 2 years too early. And I think they're going to live in that fear. Not that LaVine is as good as Jimmy Butler. I think it was pretty clear that Butler, because he's such an impactful two-way player,
right,
you know, had a higher ceiling than LaVine, who I also have come around. I really like Zach LaVine, and on that contract, he's an absolute steal.
Yep.
But I think you're right to bring up, you know, the cost of star trades has just gotten so astronomical lately that I think any bad team with the star, you know, I think that the Wizards, I wrote an article at Forbes the other day about this, like the Wizards should be looking at that James Harden package, be like, oh man, like I know we don't want to trade Bradley Beal, but if we can get 6 or 7 years worth of draft pick control from another team, like we're not going anywhere with this core. We have to be honest with ourselves. So from the Bulls perspective, Jay, what would you want back for Zach LaVine? Like how much is an adequate price for him?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of hard to say. Like, you obviously need like multiple picks. Like, if you're looking at Philly, like, I mean, you're thinking probably Maxey as like your young player, and then you need at least probably what, two to three picks. Like, Zach is not on, again, Zach's not Harden, Zach's not Beal, but he's like, I don't know how far behind. Like, I think he's getting to maybe, I mean, Beal also like isn't a good defender either. I know Beal's leading the league in scoring like 35 a game right now, but I mean, Zach is, again, he's almost up at 30 at similar efficiency. So like, I don't know how far behind Zach is from Beal. He's a couple years younger. So how old is Beal? Is he 26, 27?
27, I believe.
So Zach's 25, I think. So like, he's still a few years younger. So like, you would still probably want a lot. So yeah, you'd need at least a couple picks, a good young player. Maybe you get some pick swaps in there as well. Like, just, I don't know. It is so hard to say because these trades have been so ridiculous. When you look at, I know James Harden is James Harden, but I mean, you get whatever, four draft picks, four firsts and four swaps. And who knows how good those picks will end up being, but like, and then the Holiday trade obviously kind of throws that as well for a guy who's never really been an all-star, but who's obviously very good. So like, you would need, especially for the Bulls, like you're not going to just trade him for crap. Like, you're not going to do like one young player and like one like late round pick. I mean, especially if we're talking about Philly, like those are picks that probably won't be that great. So you're going to need probably a few more if they're going to be late firsts.
Yeah.
So that would probably add to the total as well. So yeah. So like, because I don't want the Bulls just totally like dump. Because they kind of, that's what they did with Jimmy Butler. You mentioned Jimmy Butler. Right. They traded Jimmy for an injured Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, who was terrible as a rookie, and then they basically swapped their first round picks with the Timberwolves. Like that was an awful trade return for a guy who was a top 10 player the year before. Like as the Bulls were mediocre that three alpha season, but Jimmy Butler, like impact wise, was almost a top 5 guy, like top 10 definitely. So like, and they traded him for basically scraps. Like, good thing like it was Zach LaVine and not Andrew Wiggins, I guess, coming back from that trade. So at least Zach has developed into what he has now. But like right now we're looking at like Chris Dunn is gone and Lowry might be gone too. And you're looking at like just Zach LaVine from this trade, from that Jimmy Butler trade. So like, you need to at least make sure you get something good. So like, maybe the Bulls would get a better offer, a better trade for Zach LaVine than they did for Jimmy, which would be crazy because Jimmy is obviously much better. But yeah, they should, because like if they got a bad offer, like I don't want to just trade Zach for scraps because he is very good, even if the team hasn't been good.
Yeah, right. And also adding to a whole that, Jay, is the fact that Zach LaVine, as you pointed out, is on a very, very reasonable deal. Like, he's underpaid for what he produces. That should only increase his trade value further. I mean, we're looking at someone, you know, at Beal and Harden, who are earning like, you know, super max dollars. LaVine isn't even breaking $20 million a year this year or next. That's a huge asset. If you can get someone in there who is as efficient and as dangerous a scorer that he is, and look, he is probably one of the most like effortless scorers in the league right now. It just, he is so smooth. And if you put him on a good team like that, that efficiency could absolutely skyrocket. I think that just makes him such a valuable piece. And, you know, we're talking about Philly. I think there's an interesting component here that we haven't touched on. So when they were, you know, involved in all the rumors for Harden, there was word coming out that Daryl Morey was trying to acquire picks to add to that package for Harden, like maybe acquire.
Instead of Maxey, because wanted Maxey and Daryl didn't want to give him up.
Right. So, but basically, that logic can be applied to many teams. Like, if you're trading LaVine to a contender, presumably the draft picks you're getting in return aren't really that great. But if you can get those guys, you know, those GMs to basically say, okay, we know those picks aren't great, so let's see if we can swing a deal. But like, maybe we give up, you know, three of our somewhat late firsts for a lottery pick, or a team presumed to be in the lottery, or something of that caliber. Like, it's on the team that trades for LaVine to find a suitable package. It's on them to give up quality. The Bulls can just say no and keep him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so what would you want for LaVine here? Because he came up, I mean, Jay, as you said, he's been a popular target on Sixers Twitter in particular after the Harden stuff didn't materialize. And I was, you know, going back and forth with someone yesterday about what would be a suitable package for Beal and for LaVine. So I'm curious if my perception is like drastically different than what you guys would want for him.
Definitely start with Maxey. I think Jay hit that right on the head. Definitely start with Maxey. And then you ask for Thiepel as well.
Yep.
And you kind of see where that goes.
Yeah,
if you get Maxey and Thiepel, then it comes down to like the amount of draft picks and where you expect those picks to land. Because again, presumably those are not going to be high draft picks whatsoever. So like, what, maybe two of them? Like, it's some, I don't even know. Do you have all your own picks, Brian? Or
they gave up the 2025, I think it's top six protected to OKC for in the Horford trade. But I believe otherwise they do have all of their own picks, plus they have a couple of future seconds from the Knicks. Which, okay. I mean, the Knicks are off to a decent start this year, but, you know, you're probably still looking at a relatively high pick.
All right. In that case, I would want an unprotected number 2021 pick, because that draft looks good. And then I would want to see if I could also squeeze out an unprotected 2023 pick, because maybe that's the double draft year.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, you can actually come out with quite a decent haul for LaVine.
like without giving up any of the major core if you're Philly. Like, yes, absolutely giving up Tyrese Maxey, that's a blow. Giving up Thybulle, that's a blow. And then if you the Bulls end up getting two good players in 2021 and 2023 off of those picks, yes, you look at it and go, that's a steep price. But you get Zach LaVine, who's not done improving, clearly, and is as hard a worker as anyone, really. I mean, that's one thing we can never take away from him. He's such a hard worker. I think he'll fit very well with Embiid, too. Like, the need for Ben Simmons and shooting, like, lessens dramatically with LaVine on the roster. Mm-hmm. I might even go as far as saying that Embiid, Simmons, and LaVine, that's, I wouldn't rule that team out, you know, representing the East in the finals.
Oh, wow. Well, and they would have to include Danny Green.
Yeah, for salary.
But Danny Green is irrelevant. Like, he's just a throw-in for salary cap.
Well, for the Bulls, I mean, he's still a good... Like, Danny Green catches a lot of slander because he's so inconsistent, but, like, Danny Green's still a productive player.
From, like, 0-for-9 one game, and then he will, like, 9 threes the next game.
Yeah.
Like, no, but the Bulls just don't have a need for him, so maybe, you can expand it into a three-team trade where he gets, you know, goes somewhere where, you know, it makes more sense, because otherwise, like, what's the point?
For the Bulls, there's no real... I mean, I guess he could be that kind of thing that Billy Donovan's talking about, where he can, like, teach these guys how to win, because I think there is...
Right, he's some an value. Astronaut, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly, right. He's actually seen what the playoffs are like, unlike the rest of the Bulls roster. That's interesting, because I was... Yeah, the thing I said yesterday would be, Danny Green, Maxey, Thybulle, and a pick for LaVine, so at least we're not... too far off in terms of value.
Let me just ask you this. What if Lauri Markkanen was included? What would you be willing to give up there?
Ooh, I mean, I don't know if that would change much from the Sixers' end, just because I don't think they need another big and they would have to pay him right away.
Where do you fit with, like, Harris there anyways? Like,
yeah.
What are you doing with Lauri Markkanen, I guess?
Well, I'm just trying to see what the value is, because Jason, you and I can agree on this. Bulls, there's a significant portion of Bulls Twitter that is just enamored with Lauri Markkanen and is, like, completely sold on the idea that he's a future star. And my God, is he not?
I had high hopes for him, but at this point, like, it's been 3+ years. Like, he did start the season before this stint on the COVID list or whatever. Like, he was shooting pretty well, but even when he does shoot well, he just doesn't do anything else well. Yeah. Like, he has some, like, there have been some interesting lineups with him, like, playing the five, and they go, like, five out. And, like I said, he's been shooting really well, or he was shooting really well before he went out. But, like, again, he doesn't play make. He doesn't defend. He can't. He's not a rebound. So, like, he's not. Yeah, he's an okay rebounder at times. So just, like, while he still can't, if he's shooting well, like, he does have some value as a nice role player. But, like, star potential, like, he can't create offense for himself, like, effectively. He can't create offense for others, and he can't protect the rim. If you're playing 4 or 5 like that, like, you're just not going to be, like, a total impact player if you can't do that.
Chicago has not won a single game this year where he's played over 20 minutes.
Wow. That's a... I mean, to be fair to Markkanen, for the Sixers, I don't think he would change much, but for a rebuilding team or a different team that, like, has a bigger need in the front
maybe
court,
take a shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, if it's the Raptors, maybe. I mean, I don't know if Siakam's coming back at that trade, but, you know, they're one that clearly needs a lot of help in the front court.
Chris Boucher, dude. He's killing
it. I know. Or Boston, maybe. I don't know. Like,
I've tested that well. They are not high on Mr. Markin. Honestly,
Boston want Otto Porter Jr.? He fits right into that Hayward trade exception. That seems like really a possibly obvious move, maybe.
Yeah.
Him or Thad, I think, but
it's funny you mentioned that, because every time I have the like the Lauri Markkanen and Boston conversation with Boston fans, they just immediately pivot to Otto Porter. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah. It'd be, it's just kind of be like a poor, kind of a poor man's Hayward replacement into that trade exception. And it's just for this year. It's like, it seems like it makes sense. They have a lot of young guys. I think they still probably have a ton of picks. I would assume the Bulls could probably get something good for it. Decent.
Yeah. And if Zach is traded, like, the obvious follow-up is trading, you know, Otto, because why not?
Oh, yeah, it's Zach. You might as well just tank, and you trade Otto, you trade Thad, and then you just play for the draft picks. Yeah, you trade him, load up your asset base, you got Patrick Williams and you got Kobe still and Wendell, and you kind of go from there. Maybe you get Kate Cunningham or Suggs or one of those guys.
Yeah. So we'll see. Do you guys, Jay, do you guys think they should by March 25th trade LaVine, assuming they get a, you know, a half decent offer, or are you in the mindset like they can punt it till the offseason, even punt it to next year's trade deadline before they have to make a move either way?
I do think a lot depends on like how this goes. If the season does go in the tank, I would absolutely try to do it, because then it's just like, this would be your third year with him healthy, totally healthy, and if you just can't win, like, as good as he is, like, you might as well, I guess, start over. And then I guess you trade him, you trade a bunch of other guys as well, and just kind of reshuffle the rebuild kind of more around Patrick Williams and Kobe White. I think, but the problem is the East is so shitty. Like, I do wonder, like, if they're both like a game like better than the last place team, and then they're also like a game and a half out of six right now. Like, I do wonder, like, if the East like stays crappy like this, if they're close to that play-in, like, maybe they won't do it. Like, I kind of think it might take a huge like tank job if they really fall apart, which I don't know if they're gonna do. Like, I don't know if they're that bad. Like, like I said, they have looked better even with some of these bad losses they've had lately. They have been very competitive. It's just been a matter of like one or two shots here and there, and they lose these games. So like, even though the upcoming schedule is pretty tough, it does lighten up a bit in February, and then like beginning of March, I think the back end of the schedule should be somewhat easier. I think depending on all these tough games that they played at the start, like, maybe they think that they'll make a run for like one of the play-in spots. And you can definitely argue that that's not the way that they should go. I think regardless, they definitely should be looking to trade the veteran guys. Like, Thad has looked good. Like I said, trade him for something, trade Sato for something, look to trade Otto. And like, but in terms of trading Zach, I think that might be like a, if they're going really bad, they'll do it. Or if they get like a Godfather offer for him, which I don't know if that's going to happen. But so like, if they're right kind of like teetering on the play-in and you get a Godfather offer, like, I think you probably should do it. But it would have to be a lot for them to like just totally give up on the season if they're kind of right there in the playoff mix.
Right.
And I guess that's a good point you bring up, is like, I wonder how the play-in tournament is going to affect how teams approach the trade deadline, since they're now, you know, in theory, 10 chances to make the playoffs instead of 8. So will some of these teams that really should be in sell-off rebuild mode, are they going to keep false hope alive because they could like maybe chase the 10 seed and get into the play-in?
Yeah, I mean, especially with like the flattened lottery odds too, like maybe just the combination of the lottery odds flattened, you have a better chance of the playoffs now with these 10 teams. Like, you might as well, maybe kind of try to do that instead of like loud tanking. I don't know. Yeah, it definitely does make for an interesting calculus there, especially with the Bulls, who are in year four of the rebuild, but they have a new front office. Like, the front office, like, has been very quiet. They like haven't really not really sure what they're thinking. Like, I have no idea if they really like Zach LaVine or not. Like, they really, like, they said in the offseason they like these guys, they wanted to see how they would do this year. So like, maybe but I don't know if AK actually does is like a fan of Levine's game, and like if he thinks that they should pay him a lot of money. Like, there really hasn't been much reporting on it. Like, so it's kind of up in the air. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one point I want to raise as well, if we flip it to the other side of the coin, like, Jason, you brought this up about 20 minutes ago in regards to like maybe keeping Zach, and just in terms of like the salary, if you could get Zach back at a salary that averaged like $25 million, would you do it? Because I think I would lean yes. I think his current production is like worthy of that. If you can get long term, like, but if it's like 30 or 34 or something, like, then like, no.
Yeah, I mean, maxes are what, like, super maxes these days are what, like $40 million. I mean, obviously some of these guys are making like 40 plus million, and Zach's not going to get that much, but like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, $25 million for a like one of the best scorers in the league, even if he does kind of stink at other areas of the game, like, it's not bad. It's not bad. I mean, you could probably, if you really want to, you could try to still build around that for sure. Like, you have Patrick Williams too. Like, I do think ultimately they probably do have to choose between Zach and Kobe. So like, if you are gonna pay Zach, like, I don't know if you're going forward with Zach and Kobe. Like, whenever Kobe's up for his extension, that'll be after next season, he'll be eligible for an extension. Like, I just don't know if that's gonna be viable. I don't want to give up on them because they are fun and they seem like good guys who work really hard and they can really get buckets. But I just don't know, like, if you're building a contending team, can those two? I know a lot of people will point to Portland and Dame and CJ, but I mean, CJ is miles better than Kobe White, and Dame is better than Zach. So like, That's right. they're ideally right now, like best case, you're looking at like poor man's Dame and CJ. And like, is that really going to are you going to invest a lot of money in that long term? Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. And so, also worth noting, the Bulls have never given out a $100 million contract, at least not yet.
Oh, yeah. Is Jimmy's the biggest? That was like 95.
Jimmy's the biggest at 95. And wow. That was the same as Rose's extension back in the day. They have never given out a contract over $100 million.
Well, assuming worst case scenario, assuming something goes horribly wrong and people aren't vaccinated, we still can't get fans in the stadiums next year, and the cap only goes 3% for the next two seasons, it'd be at 115.8 for the 22-23 season, which is when LaVine becomes a free agent. A 5-year max for him re-signing with the Bulls would be $201.5 million. So,
no way he's getting that. No way.
Yeah.
As good a scorer as he is, like, I don't think he'd get a max. But I mean, you look at some of these other guards, like a lot of that is like guys re-signing with their own teams. Like if Zach was doing this now, like, and on his first contract, I guess he'd be getting like the Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell money. But the fact that he has been in the league for all these years and he's just really never gotten that much better defensively and he still has all these flaws, like, it probably wouldn't be getting that much, but I mean, I'm sure he'll be looking for 30 plus.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll get it, but
that's what I don't know if 25, you know, a 5-year 125 would be great, but that's 75 below his max. That just seems like,
I don't know.
Unless he'd go for that. Yeah.
No, he probably wouldn't.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe if he like believes in the Bulls' vision and like thinks, you know, wants to carve out more space so they can sign other guys or like re-sign his teammates to high contracts as well. But that's a big jump. And again, it's only, you know, there's always like the mantra is it only takes one team to screw everything up. You know,
and a lot of this could depend on just like how the Bulls play in the next year. I mean, he's never been on a winning team. So like if they keep sucking, like, I don't think he'll want, as much as he might like Chicago, like being the number one guy, like I would think at some point he'll be like, I need to go somewhere I can win some damn games.
Right. Maybe him and Beal should just team up somewhere. The Knicks should carve out double maxes for 2022. And at that point, Julius Randle will be off the books. Yeah, there we go.
But can I just raise a point that I think is also kind of forgotten about LaVine? This is his seventh season. He's had six head coaches. I kind of think that's also something that's out of his hands a little bit. I think like if you give Billy Donovan the chance and if he's there for an extended period of time and you finally get a coach who can connect with him on it, like on a long-term scale, instead of, you know, being like the lame duck coaches that he's had for a long time, maybe you get something more out of him in areas that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, maybe. The fact that he has been in the league so long and he's still, I feel like he's gotten slightly better defensively. Like he's a decent on-ball defender. It's just like his off-ball awareness has always been bad. He makes big mistakes in big moments. So like, I don't know if that has anything to do with coaching as much as he just can't. He's just bad at it. His defensive basketball IQ was terrible. He's obviously got the physical tools to be like a good defender. He's super athletic. Like again, one-on-one, like he can be decent when he's locked in, but it's not always the case. And just like the off-ball stuff is just awful. And then, like, the playmaking, he has improved as a passer, for sure, that's like, no doubt, but just the decision-making is always can be tough to learn if you just don't have that innate, like, ability to make those high-level passes and decisions, like, and the turnovers. Like, he just has a lot of bad turnovers, so it's like, I don't know if that's as much coaching when he's been in the league for so long. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe Billy would be able to coach some of that stuff up a bit more, but I don't know. I don't want to rag on him too much because I do like him. I've come around on him. He just does have some of those fatal flaws that limit him in terms of being like your best player if you want to actually win a lot of games.
Right. No, I agree with you entirely. I'm just like trying to get into the head of him a little bit because I can't help but think that if you've had six head coaches, eventually, like you just like you are starting to look out for number one at some point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just carve out your own niche, compare yourself to yourself and not really take anything else into the consideration.
Especially when the last two were Fred Hoiberg, who is a softie, and Jim Boylan, who's an idiot.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Like he did not get along with Fred Hoiberg either to that extent. Like because Fred didn't really understand what he had him in, and then Boylan came over and was just a nincompoop. Yeah. Like I think Billy Donovan, ultimately, it's only been 12 games, but it could be one of the best things that happens to him in this NBA career, which makes me think also that maybe AK just like looks at that and goes, you know what? We're unlocking something because of Billy. Like, we have finally a professional head coach on our team, and maybe we need to give Zach that time.
Yeah, I mean, I would have no problem with that again. And if there, unless there's like some ridiculous Godfather offer out there, like,
right,
I'm fine keeping Zach LaVine. I totally get it. Like, you don't have to trade your best players just because, like, you don't have to do that and like totally tank all the time. Like, you don't have to do that. You can try to build around a pretty nice player and try to make other moves that help help mask some of his flaws, help accentuate his strengths and all that. And they could do that. I'd be totally fine with that. But obviously, again, if there is a Godfather offer out there, sure, pull the trigger, especially if the team sucks.
Right. Right. And also we're going to be seeing next year if Patrick Williams like takes a major leap, because according to CNBC or NBC Chicago, like, he's the next Kawhi apparently. So,
sure.
No, they have fun on that Twitter account.
My they gosh. Do. They have a lot of fun. That's a, it is a fan service account for sure. Yeah.
I want one person to be like, he's the next Garrett Temple. Like, give me one just
that's Denzel. Have you noticed? Like, when they are on the court together, it's Denzel and it's dad Denzel. Like, those two are just...
All right. Well, Jay, I know you got to get going here. So one more time, can you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
Absolutely. On Twitter, @Bulls_Jay. And then stuff, we got the Cash Considerations podcast with me and Ricky O'Donnell. We always do that every week. We've done some stuff on here as well on Locker Room. So that's always fun. We'll have to do that again sometime soon. A nice live Locker Room Cash Considerations. But we'll be recording our next pod sometime next week after these. We got the Mavs Bulls today in a couple hours. Then they play the New Look Rockets on Monday. And then we'll probably pod after that. And then also write stuff at SB Nation's Bloggable. Forbes, I do Bull stuff, and then shout out to Clutch Points and Clutch Points' crazy graphic department. It's great stuff.
That they do. Well, thanks again for joining us. I'm sorry for how many LaVine Sixers trade proposals I'm now going to send your way in the next 2 months.
It's all good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Later, Ben.
All right. Well, thank you again to Jason Pat for that good Bulls talk. We do have some other news that we have to get to today, Mort. The James Harden trade is official now. Yep. So we saw James Harden make his debut last night against the Orlando Magic. The Nets won 122-115. He's the first person in franchise history to put a 30-point triple-double in his debut. So 32 points, 14 assists, 12 rebounds, 8 of 18 shooting. KD was absurd, 42 points. Didn't get a ton from the supporting cast. You got Joe Harris 17, Jeff Green 10, and that's about it. So what?
He's already killing the bench. No.
As suspected, yeah. So what did you see out of the Nets? Kyrie still. He is back with the team, but he was ruled out for health and safety protocols on Saturday because the NBA did fine him $50,000 for that video of him at the birthday party or whatever, but he should be back soon. So noting Kyrie was not there, but what'd you see out of this first? I mean, this is the Browingtons were reunited for the first time in almost 10 years.
I saw a James Harden who started off the game doing what he should be doing, which was getting everyone involved and actually looking engaged when other people had the basketball. That's the thing. He's always been a tremendous passer and a tremendous playmaker and a tremendous scorer, obviously. But whenever the ball is not in his hands, he's just standing around watching. And that was not the case last night, at least from my perspective. Like, he looked really engaged. He looked like he actually wanted to be more of a floor spacer. So kudos for him for playing the way that, you know, you and I are skeptical about. And it's one game, obviously. It's not going to say, like, how he's going to play 2 months from now, but that was encouraging. I'm admittedly way more impressed by Kevin Durant and 42 points, given, you know, he still came coming off the Achilles tear, but this was the start that they needed. This is exactly what they needed from James Harden.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it you know, he had 9 turnovers, but again, it's like you're playing I can't imagine they had a practice with him before. I'm guessing they just kind of threw him out there and said, figure it out. Well, you know, we'll get better over time. So I'm not super concerned there. I don't think it's a trend that we need to worry about a couple months down the line. I will say, I think the concerns that we had, and just we as a collective NBA community, that we had about their defense, at least for one night, have proven correct, because this is a Magic team that did not top 100 points in each of their last four games. They haven't topped, God, when's the last time? I don't think they've topped 110 since Fultz got hurt, right?
Right, right. So, and we can boil this down to one thing, and I think maybe you're already going there, so I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah, well, I mean, DeAndre Jordan,
yep.
You know, without Jared Allen manning the middle, we've got DeAndre Jordan, yep. Who is only a -3 for the game, which I guess is a testament to playing next to Kevin Durant and James Harden.
But, yeah, exactly. You know, that's what the collective plus-minus thing. I really hate the plus-minus stats when you look at it like from a single game, because you can be absolutely horrible, but if you play alongside like the greatest players ever, it's just going to like make you look good, even if you're bad.
Right, because, I mean, Vucevic just absolutely cooked him in every possible way.
Oh, he took him behind the tool shed. He went 34 old school.
Points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 steals, 14 of 22 shooting, 6 of 12 from 3. A great game from Vooch. But, yeah, I mean, you know, now that we've seen it in action, now that we've not only the offensive potency of a Harden Durant, where, you know, they combined for 72 points, 19 assists, like, that was not the concern. It's, what is the Nets look? The Nets defense look like without Jared Allen, and not a promising first return. I would say that much.
Right. No, this just goes to show how great Jared Allen is, just in terms of defensive energy as well. I mean, DJ just looks old and disengaged and just can't keep up. I don't know, whatever term you want to use, but I don't think he's a guy who can play large minutes anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he's not good.
I think it's as simple as that, yeah. I think we're seeing it in Philly sometimes with Dwight Howard, where in these games where Dwight has to fill in for Joel Embiid and be the starter,
yeah,
it's not so great, but Dwight in limited minutes, in like these 15, 20, 25-minute bursts, really good. Great backup setter. Just should not be playing 35, 40 minutes a game anymore, which is fine. He's 35 years old. You know, DeAndre Jordan was never Dwight Howard, even in their respective primes. He was not, like, good rebounder, a great rebounder, good shot blocker.
You're telling me Doc Rivers lied to us when he said he was a defensive player of the year candidate?
Oh, God, I forgot about... Oh, man. Yeah. Yes, I am.
Okay.
But yeah, I just think he's at the stage of his career where you can't really count on him to play those big minutes. And I mean, you're going to have a lot of these KD at the five, Jeff Green at the five. And we saw Jeff Green at the five work pretty well for Houston last year. So I'm not saying that's not a plausible lineup for them at some point. But, you know, I think it is a concern as you look ahead. We mentioned this when we reacted to the Harden trade at first. Like, this was the big concern about them without Jared Allen. What does their defense look like? Not great so far. So, I mean, more like the buyout market is an option. As we discussed last time, they really don't have a ton of trade assets left now that they've given away all of their first round picks from now until the end of the world. I mean, the one name that came to mind yesterday when I was thinking about this, if Cleveland buys out JaVale McGee,
yeah, that's a good one.
I feel like that's probably their best bet at this point.
That is a really good one. Yeah, that could happen.
Yeah, because I mean they got Jared Allen and they have Andre Drummond still. So like JaVale McGee, I just don't know why you need him. He's just taking up a roster spot at this point.
Yeah, and I was also like toying around with an idea earlier while Jason was on. Because he mentioned that Thad Young would probably be traded from the Bulls if Zach was traded, and even if Zach wasn't traded, you probably should shop him. Like, I know Thad is not a center, but he's pretty strong defensively. And at 6'9"-ish, in today's league, you can probably get away with it.
Yeah. I mean, in most matchups, like, yeah. I think you'll run into issues. You know, again, it's going to be... I don't think the Nets in the regular season, I'm not concerned about them. It's when you look ahead to, yeah, like, second round conference finals, if you're going against Giannis, you're going against KD, you're going against Embiid, who is taking those guys?
Right.
And I mean, none of these buyout options are going to be the answer to that question either. But I don't think they have an answer. Now, I guess the counterpoint is, you know, if you're the Sixers and you're running through Embiid, maybe that takes focus away from the three-point shooters, and maybe you just apply the math problem, and if we're hitting threes and they're running through Embiid in the post and he's only getting twos, like, we're just going to... numbers are going to add up at some point, and we are going to outscore them, and we don't really care that we can't defend him. But, right. I don't know if that's actually the case. We'll learn a lot. I think the Nets and the Bucks play Monday, if I'm not mistaken. So
that's going to be a huge test.
Yeah. And I caution against us taking away too much from there, because hopefully Kyrie is back, so it'll be the first time we see this new Brooklyn Big Three in action, but it will be the first time this Brooklyn Big Three has ever been together in action. So, you know, going against a Bucks team that has largely, yeah, they've got Drew and he's still working his way in, but, like, you know, most of their core has been together for a while. They're going to have a lot better chemistry together than the Nets. So if the Bucks annihilate them, I don't want us to overreact necessarily.
Right.
But, I hopefully we'll learn a lot about both sides and where they stand from that game.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm just going to reiterate what I said, I think, in the last episode or maybe the episode before that. I don't want this to end up in a situation where they have to overburden Kevin Durant defensively.
Yeah.
I think that's the worst thing that could happen. Like, as a result, like, if DJ just proves unplayable, then... logically, you're going to be thinking, well, who's our best defender with size? Oh, I know. It's Kevin Durant. And it doesn't matter that we're already asking him to put up 25-plus per game. You know, let's have him play the all-NBA defense that he used to do. And I think that's just... God, that's risky, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's still coming off of an Achilles injury. He's looked great so far, knock on wood. But, yeah, especially this early in the regular season, you don't want to be overburdening him 4 months before the playoffs even begin.
Yeah. No, you're right. And you know, this is one of those things where you're absolutely right. If you look at the buyout market, like, obviously some names are going to come out, like, that might surprise us and whatnot. And if you look at the free agency options, it is not great. Like, none, you know, even JaVale McGee, who you brought up, like, could be interesting, but there are no names out there that excites me about this.
Yeah, I mean, whoever they get is not going to be a high volume scorer, but they don't need...
No, screw that.
Yeah, between KD, Kyrie, Harden, they don't need that. They just need a 7-foot body rebounding. To stand. Yeah, exactly. Block shots, rebound, and just get in the way. Like, clog up driving lanes occasionally, or, like, be able to defend the occasional pick and roll. Because I feel like DeAndre Jordan, all he can do is play drop coverage now. You're not going to ask him to go out to the perimeter and cover.
Yeah.
You know, so you're inviting guys to just pull up from mid-range. They get around the screen, and they're going to hit an 18-footer or a 16-footer on you. And he's not going to be able to stop that. And once we get to the playoffs and we have these guys who have that elite scoring potential, like, in a matchup against Boston, like, Kemba, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown are going to feast against that coverage.
Yeah. Oh, I actually have a name, but it really hinges on the Hornets becoming bad. But Bismack Biyombo wouldn't be a bad option if it came to that. Like, if they bomb out. Of course, this would be a situation where they would have to completely hit rock bottom, and so far they look pretty good. So
yeah.
I don't think that's in the cards. But if that situation changes, Bismack Biyombo would be really interesting there.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know why Charlotte, like, if they're going to re-sign him, I don't know if they're going to... get rid of him right away.
Why do you think they would re-sign him?
Well, didn't they just re-sign him this year?
No, but I'm saying they came with high expectations. I'm saying if they fall through and just end up sucking, then, you know, they might as well.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's no harm in having... He's on a min deal, right? Like, there's no harm in keeping him there.
No, but he's a good defender. So what I'm saying is if you are, like, close to the regular season end and you see yourself becoming bad... Again, I'm not projecting that the Hornets are bad, but if that's the scenario, wouldn't you just want the most lottery balls even with the lottery reform? So if you take a good defender off the court, presumably you're going to lose more games, right?
Yeah, but you just don't have to play him.
Yeah, that's true.
You can keep him on the roster.
Yeah, but you also want to make his agent happy because he might want to play. Remember all the agent favors out there. Like, if you're not going to play and you know that he would get burned elsewhere, the agent is going to be in the ears of that GM immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's more teams that are too crowded in the front court. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
But I guess Orlando isn't really there anymore because of all the injuries. But like a Kem Birch would be interesting too.
Yeah, he would.
Like that. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... Actually, in the next week, now that I look at it for Brooklyn, you have Milwaukee Monday, 2 against Cleveland, where again, now you have Drummond and Jared Allen. So it's just going to be 48 minutes of bigs you can't guard.
Right.
And then 2 against Miami back-to-back on Saturday and Monday, and Bam Adebayo, again, it comes down to, like, are you putting KD on him or are you putting DeAndre Jordan on him? Because you're putting KD, you're overtaxing KD. Hopefully, I mean, by that point, hopefully Miami is back to full strength. I know they still got a couple guys in the COVID protocols. But, yeah, I mean, I think in the next 8 days, we'll have a much better sense of just how bad the Nets defense is and whether they, like, how actively they need to be searching out help.
Right. Do they have some second rounders left?
I mean, they didn't trade any in that deal. So I'm going to double check. I would assume so. I can't imagine they traded all 7 of those. They have 2 seconds from... Oh, none of these are conveying. So they have Atlanta's second rounder this year.
Right.
They do not have their own second rounder. That's going to Charlotte. They have a second rounder from Indiana, protected 45 through 60, so that's not conveying.
Okay, because I have a name if they have a second rounder.
Okay, yeah, they have Atlantis.
You're going to hate me for this, but I think I'm onto something, and you'll laugh.
Okay.
Chris Silva.
You're right. I will laugh. But yeah, that's... Look, they're desperate right now. And Chris Silva, I mean, he's a nice energy player, if nothing else.
He's size. Yeah. He definitely ate Joel Embiid's lunch the other day.
A couple times.
A couple times, yeah. I'm just saying, he's not getting burned in Miami, and for reasons that I just don't understand, because he is legitimately good. Why not? Why not see if, like, there is a deal to be made there?
Yeah, man, I'm looking at... the Nets owe so many picks. This is really bad. Yeah, they really... If they can't get it with a second rounder, they're going to have to rely on the buyout market, because they are just...
Yeah.
Or they have to trade Shamit. I mean, I think that's their last chip that they have.
Oh, yeah. So maybe we should go into the Shamit debate. He's been brutal.
It's been rough. It's been a rough go for him, for sure.
Yeah, like I'm not saying this is, you know, the Landry Shamit that we know, but 34% from the field. That's not even from three. That's from the field. Yeah. It's been god awful. What the hell has happened? He was supposed to be this next big shooter, and like when I remember when the deal went down, and we applauded what Brooklyn did for getting him on. We loved it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, last year he shot 37 from three. This rookie year he shot 42. Like, you know, that's the Landry Shamit we thought they were getting.
I mean, okay, it's only been 14 games, but we're still 14 games. While it's a small sample size overall, it's still a reasonable chunk, right?
Yeah, I mean, we are rapidly, after this week, we're at the quarter mark of the season already.
Yeah, and he's really been bad. But if NBA teams are not acknowledging this as Landry Shamet being, you know, the same Landry Shamet, and they still understand that, oh, there's a better player in there, and are willing to pay for it, yes, he probably should be the next piece to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really their only... It's him or second rounders, and that is their only way to improve this roster other than buyouts.
And he's making $2 million, I see. So
yeah, he's still on his rookie deal, and he's got one more year left after this. So
yeah,
you know, there's a value in acquiring him because mm-hmm. he'll be a restricted free agent in 2022. And yeah, I mean, if I'm a team that has a spare backup big and I have no use for him, like, Miami should absolutely trade Chris Silva for Landry Shamet if that's on the table. I don't think it is, but...
No. Oh, and while we were, you know, talking about DeAndre, I just want to point out that even after this season, he's owed almost $20
million. Yeah. We hated that deal the second it went down, and yep. Of course it's because he's buddies with KD and Kyrie, so maybe that was just the cost of business, but ooh, they are going to regret that signing for every minute of it.
His contract is not going to have value until the 2022-2023 season, because that will make him an expiring contract.
right.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
All right. So, we got to move on to a certain Raptor, don't we?
Well, I was going to go to Indiana instead quickly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We got some news. This was Saturday.
Yeah.
That another part of the four-team deal, or I guess they were actually two separate transactions, but Caris LeVert, the newest Indiana Pacer, is out indefinitely after an MRI revealed a small mass on his left kidney. It was found during the physical prior to the Pacers finalizing the trade. So they did, despite this, end up finalizing it. I think they got
right.
$2.6 million in cash and then an extra second-round pick. But we don't know when Caris LeVert is coming back, if at all, this year.
No. I'm not married to a doctor. You are, so maybe tell us what this means.
I asked her last night, and she was like, I was like, what does this mean? And she said, I don't know. But she was like, how did they find this during a physical? Like, I guess that's the first surprise. I don't know how in-depth these physicals are and if it's normal to give them that kind of imaging.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, I mean, that was her first reaction, was just like, how did that come up during a routine physical?
Yeah.
And thankfully it did. I mean, right. I think Kevin Pritchard was the one who gave the press conference Saturday, and he was saying, like, we would not have found this if not for the physical. So he would have been playing basketball, and he would have had this mass on his kidney undiagnosed. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, first of all, just best wishes to LeVert and hope he gets back healthy and, you know, comes back soon. But, like, more importantly, just, oh, man, that's scary. So hopefully all is okay and he's back sooner than later, but we just don't know at this point. So right now, I mean, effectively the Pacers for the short term traded Victor Oladipo for nothing. Until he returns or until Jeremy Lamb returns more. I mean, we were both very high on what we've seen out of the Pacers so far.
Yeah.
Are you worried about them taking a bit of a slide until they get some of these reinforcements back?
Well, it certainly doesn't help them, but I will say I've been so impressed with Malcolm Brogdon this year that I think, you know, he has a chance to just kind of solidify those, you know, the wing slot and kind of overcome that. And then you see Domantas Sabonis, who's like very sneakily is having a 22-13-6 year, which is ungodly. I think offensively they could be fine. I just think they need something else. And that's the problem, right? Because if they had CJ Warren, that would have been different. Like, that would have been that third guy they could have picked up and like given the reins to. But, you know, he's out. And I mean, the Pacers and injuries and medical issues, like, I just so desperately want them to be healthy, all of them, at once, just at the same time. That would be so great. But Brian, I hate doing this to you, but I think we might have to get a little bit back on the Miles Turner, come on, let's go wagon, because it's they need him to step up now. They need him to actually make shots.
I am not getting back. I have made peace with who Miles Turner is, and I mean, we'll do a quarter season awards pod soon enough, but spoiler alert, he is my defensive player of the year so far.
That's great. I mean, yeah.
But I mean, like, I hear what you're saying. They're gonna need more offense because you can't just run it all through Sabonis and Brogdon, and hopefully maybe he steps up a little bit, but I think the ship has sailed on him being a go-to 20 points.
Oh, no, I'm not saying. I'm not going that route, but he's averaging 12 points a game. I'm saying, like, just if you can, if you're Miles Turner, if you could just add one more dunk and one more three, just do that.
Easier said than done.
I know. But if you can do that over the next couple of weeks a game, just one more three, one more dunk, boom, that's a 5-point increase over the next couple of weeks. Just for like 6 or 7 weeks. Come on, just once. That would be great.
I think it is more realistic to expect more out of the Holiday brothers, Doug McDermott, maybe TJ McConnell.
Oh, Dougie. Maybe it's time for Dougie to live up to the Paul Pierce comparisons pre-draft. Yeah.
Dougie hasn't been bad this year.
No, he hasn't. He's been good. Well. He needs to hit better from three. Like, that's that 36% for him, that is like super low. He's too good of a shooter to like bounce around in the mid-30s. He needs to be way above 40, you know, every single year.
Yeah, I guess for Turner, I mean, he is not an elite 3-point shooter by any means, but he's been at least above 30%, above 34% each of the last four seasons. He's at 28.3 now. So that, you know, him hitting one more three a game seems like a big stretch, since his career high was 1.4 last year.
Don't seek logic in this. Don't seek logic in this. I'm just saying that if he wants to become the player that we're all hoping he can be, this is what he needs to do. He just needs to add some volume to his game.
Yeah, I mean, he might have to out of necessity, just because, I mean, Oladipo is attempting 17 shots a game almost for them. You know, LeVert would have slid into that role most likely, and probably would have been just as inefficient as Oladipo has been. It opens up 17 shots for someone else.
Right.
And TJ Warren, you know, has been out for a while now, but he was averaging almost 13 shots a game. So yeah, like there is volume to be redistributed, but I don't know that. I don't think Miles Turner is going from 10 shots to 15 shots a game.
No, like 10 I agree.
12, maybe, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think just more of the offense runs through Sabonis, Brogdon, and then the supporting cast to just let Miles Turner continue wrecking stuff on defense.
See, this is what I'm saying, basically. I don't want Turner to exert himself necessarily even more offensively. That's why I basically say one more dunk, one more three, because I don't want to see him create. I just want him to, like, if he gets the ball at the high top, he is one of those guys who will pass up threes on occasion. Just don't pass up a three. I'm not convinced that taking one more three a game and just getting into the dunker spot and getting, you know, one more jam or one more layup is going to, you know, extract more energy from him necessarily. Like, he's just hoisting up one more three. That's not... Hell, even I could do that. Like, I could hoist up a three. Right. That's fine. My point is just, like, if he has shots within the flow of the offense, just take them. Take them.
Yeah. Yeah, like I don't think they're going to be running plays for him.
No. But they aren't right now anyway. So it's fine. I'm just saying, like, if you find the ball in your hands and you know that Sabonis and Brogdon has like each taken 22 shots on the night, like maybe give them a break, Miles, and take the damn jump shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their upcoming schedule. So they've got Clippers tonight, which is going to be rough, most likely. Then we have Dallas on Wednesday. Then three more home games. Orlando, two against Toronto, two against Charlotte, Philly. So they have an opportunity to actually stay afloat here, I think, until, I mean, Jeremy Lamb, the last we heard, he's expected back at some point mid to late January, which, you know, hopefully should be in these next couple games. Again, I don't think you can expect Jeremy Lamb to be playing 30 minutes a night, but even if he's playing 15 or 20, that's another, you know, bona fide score that they can have out there. Yeah, I mean, like, I still think a full-strength Indiana team is going to be an absolute bear to deal with in the first round of the playoffs. I just hope that we see a full-strength Indiana team, because it feels like it's just one thing after another with this team.
Yeah, like, what's the timeline on T.J. Warren was indefinite, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there was some hope that he might be able to return late in the regular season, but I think that's kind of the best case scenario. It sounds like he's going to miss most, if not all, of the regular season.
Exactly. See, the Pacers now become a candidate for having someone just stepping up. Like, you know how every single year there is someone getting burned and, like, producing out of nowhere? Like, whoever?
Mm-hmm.
They're that candidate now, because, like you pointed out, they're out Victor Oladipo, who took 17 shots. They're out T.J. Warren, who took 13 shots. What the? That's 30 right there. That's 30 shots. They need to figure out some sort of offensive component there. Who is that? Could that be Jalen Lecque? Could that be Cassius Stanley? Like, Edmund Sumner? Like, I have a feeling someone that we just haven't brought up is going to come in and play, like, a decent role.
Is it Jakar Sampson season, finally?
Oh, could be. I mean, look, he did well. Remember when he averaged 20 for the Bulls over four games? And then the year after, he was just a non-factor. Like, he has a full season stat line where he's averaging 20 points and 8 rebounds over four games with the Bulls. And after that, he's just been awful. That would be fun. I wouldn't mind it. I just want to see someone step up. Someone we just have not talked about. Someone whose name we aren't accustomed to saying. Who just steps the hell up and does something. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is the one silver lining to all of these injuries for Indiana. And, you know, you're really just trying to make a positive out of a negative here, because it sucks to lose this many starters. You're right. It does give some of these young guys a chance to make more of a name for themselves. And we're seeing it kind of all across the league with all of these COVID absences. I mean, Miami the other night, like, Gabe Vincent put up 24 points against the Sixers.
He's been good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been excellent. And, like, you know, Tyrese Maxey's had more of a role this season than I would have expected, just because they've needed warm bodies. Same goes for Isaiah Joe. We're seeing it everywhere. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, it's going to be a nice chance. Yeah, for maybe a Cassius Stanley does get a little more playing time than he's been getting so far. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm still high on the Pacers in general.
Right.
I still think, even if they're, like, I think they very well might take some lumps in these coming weeks, because those Charlotte games aren't gimmies anymore. And Toronto, I think, is still better than its record. Is Indiana going to stay in the top three of the East by the end of January? I don't know. But, you know, I still think, like, if they fall to a 5 or a 6 in the first round, whichever team draws it, I'm just going to be like, ah, damn it. Like, we couldn't have just gotten the Knicks, or the Bulls, or the Cavs, or the Magic even. Like, why couldn't we just draw one of those teams?
I would agree. Raptors time?
What? Let's save it. Let's save it for the next episode.
Okay, fair enough. Because I just want to talk about Kyle Lowry, but you know what? It's fine. We'll save it. It'll give the Raptors fans something to wait on.
Yeah, and let's, because they have Dallas, 2 against Miami, 2 against Indiana over the next week. So we're going to learn a lot about the Raptors. They were started 2-8, had 2 wins against Charlotte, both of which were close but nice. If they scuffle through these next few games, then I think we have a lot to talk about their long-term future.
But we agree that Chris Boucher right now is an MIP candidate, right?
I want to, yeah, we're going to do, we got to do an awards, quarter season awards pod soon too.
Yeah.
Because I, spoiler alert, I've seen a lot of Christian Wood MIP hype, and I'm going to take your stance for a change and actually rail against an award.
Oh.
If that holds.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So, yeah. So when I actually hit it out of the ballpark with Christian Wood, you're going to take a stance?
I'll save it.
Okay.
But I just think it is ludicrous for him to be getting MIP hype given what we've seen out of him so far.
I would agree with you on that. I'm just looking forward to it. But yeah, just good. Don't crap on my guy, man. Just don't crap on my guy.
No. I love him. I'll save it.
Okay. But
again, cool. My argument is that this shouldn't have been a surprise. But yeah, let's wrap up here. So thank you guys as always for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks to listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Also, a reminder, we are being supported by Manscaped, so get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.